have as well. Hi, my name's Liz and I'm an addict. I really don't want to be sitting here at all, I have to say, probably because I know some people here. I don't know loads of people here, but I know some people here. And as soon as I came in, I was like, oh no, get me home now. And I just spoke to one of my sons, actually, just before I came in. He's like, Mummy said, if you're late, why don't you just come home, you know? And I was thinking, yeah, that'd be a good idea. And it's all right to be really uncomfortable sitting here, and it's all right for me to admit that I'm really uncomfortable sitting here, because you know what? One thing I've learnt by coming to the fellowship is to be honest. Somebody mentioned it in the reading a minute ago, about being honest, open-minded and willing. And the very first sponsor that I ever got actually said to me, you know, as long as you're honest, open-minded and willing to go to any lengths, you know, be honest and just stay open to what you hear, then you'll be all right. And do you know what? She was right as well. You know, it's been over 9 years since I had a drug or alcohol. Unfortunately, I'm one of these addicts that don't just use drugs or alcohol. I use anything else that is going, be it money, relationships, food, you know, all that sort of stuff. And for me, I have to treat all of those as the same as anything else, because for me, I can use any of those to change the way I feel. And that's ultimately, for me, what I do. I don't like the feelings that come up. I don't, you know, I don't want to sit in them. I don't want to deal with them. I want to run away, so I'll just get out of it and I'll do whatever I need to do that. Funnily enough, I had a bit of an adrenaline high Wednesday. So the reason I laugh is like running like a lunatic. Because the great thing about recovery is what's happened is that I've got a life, and I've got a life beyond what I ever imagined I would get. And I'm actually doing things today that I never thought I'd be capable of doing. You know, I'm doing a job that I love, and I'm studying as well. You know, one thing's never enough for an addict. It's like, you know, what else can I pile onto my plate, you know? And I had to get an essay in by 5 o'clock on Wednesday, and at 5 to 5, I'm running in the office, handing my essay, going, you know, I got here in time. And the rush I got from that was just unbelievable. So I just thought I'd share that with you, because that was the last time I got high. And I thought to myself, and do you know what I thought? I thought, fucking hell, I better not do that with the rest of the coursework that I've got, or else I'm in big shit. And so I just needed to admit that, because I don't want to be keeping that a secret, because, you know, the next 3 pieces of work that I do, I'll be leaving until the last minute, because I thought it was great fun. And, you know, I remember, I don't really want to get into too much detail about my using, because I'm bored listening to be quite honest. And also, for me, I didn't end up in the fellowship by accident. I didn't end up in here because my using, drinking and everything else was great fun. And I didn't end up in here because I could control it, you know, and I didn't end up in here because actually it was all right. I ended up in here because the consequences were getting worse. And really what brought me to the fellowship was actually my head. I couldn't stand the noise in my head, and it would not shut up anymore. And it didn't matter what I used, it would not stop, and it stopped working. That's why I came. I thought I was going insane. The reality was I was a bit mad, but I didn't really know it at the time. But and no matter how much I tried to stop, I couldn't. And I'd swear off it, I'd do all sorts of things to not do it. I'd at various times swap one drug for another. I thought that was okay. And funnily enough, when I came to the fellowship, I was the opposite, because I thought there was nothing wrong with using drugs. I thought drinking was my problem. And I carried on using drugs for a few weeks because I thought, ah, that's all right, it's fine. I'd sit in meetings sharing my experience, strength and dope with everybody in the meeting and just thought it was okay. You know, saying, that's fucking great, this 12-step work. This is fantastic, you know, I've discovered it. You know, my lifelong search, it was probably some sort of spiritual quest I was on, you know. Just wanting something to change the way I felt inside, because I just didn't feel that I fitted in. I was convinced I'd been born into the wrong family as well. You know, didn't you know who I was? You know, I shouldn't have been born into a family that were poor, that lived in a council estate, working class. That wasn't me. I was definitely in the wrong place. And I was too intelligent as well, so obviously couldn't be in the right family. And you know, for years I really believed that. That's quite sad, isn't it? I have no shame about where I come from now, none at all. as you can hear, I still swear a lot. You know, I started that at quite an early age. And I know that, you know, everything that's happened in my life, for me anyway, has had to happen to get in order to get me where I am right now. And what time did I start?
Just come quarter past.
Was it? Sorry. Because I think half an hour's too long to speak, but I'll probably run out of time because I want to keep talking. You know, it's progress, not perfection. I tell you what used to happen when I was drinking and using was invariably I'd fuck things up in a big way. I'd upset lots of people and I'd be so horrified by my behaviour and embarrassed and ashamed and just full of shame and guilt and remorse and all of that. And the job that I was doing for a few years meant I actually was able to travel. And the most, the furthest I ever got was London. I didn't go anywhere exotic, although I like London. and I've been here for about 21 years now. As you can tell, I've lost my Glaswegian accent. And do you know what used to happen was because I'd leave one place and think, oh, great, I can go somewhere else. Nobody knows me. Start again. You know, a new set, make new friends and everything else. Wipe the slate clean. I'll be able to control it now. You know, I'll be okay now. And needless to say, what happened was is it didn't work out that way. It just progressively got worse. And at first, it was really good laugh, you know, getting out of it. But invariably, what started to happen was is that I was beginning to feel more and more ashamed of myself. And the consequences was that it wasn't just harming me, it was harming other people around me now. You know, it started to harm my friends, you know, and then it really started to harm my family. And I've got three boys, and my two oldest ones are having birthdays next month, so they're going to be 16, 14, and my youngest one's 12. And when I got clean and sober, they were 6, 4, and 2, so that was a while ago. And I remember asking my son, I was under a year sober and clean, and I remember saying to my oldest son at the time, he was only about 7, 8, you know, what did he remember about me drinking and using? And all he said to me one was, well, look, Mum, you know what? He said, all I remember was being bored and hungry. And I just need to remind myself of that, because if nothing else, that's a good reason for me to stay clean and sober. You know, because it's not like that. I think I was about 3 or 4 years in recovery and I bought a fridge. I know that doesn't sound a huge big deal. That was a huge big deal for me, because you know why? Because I got the biggest fuck-off fridge you can imagine, and I filled it up with food. And I also made sure as well, and it's like, it's got that much of a freezer and the rest of it's massively, you know, with the fridge. And I made sure as well that my kids could go into the fridge any time and eat. I happen to have an eating disorder, but that's beside the point. Do you know what I mean? But my basically what it is my kids have not been hungry. Since I started coming to the fellowship, my kids have not gone hungry. And that's just miraculous. You know, and another thing I used to remember as well was I used to lose track of time a lot. I'd black out a lot because I used to drink so much alcohol. Very paranoid, probably because of the drugs I was taking. And also, what would happen is that days and nights would merge, so I would sort of come to and I didn't really know what time of the day it was. I didn't know whether it was light outside or dark outside, and invariably what would happen is I'd get a fright, because I'd be like, oh Christ, it's dark, or oh, it's daylight, how did that happen? And what I also used to do as well was, for me anyway, was that drugs and alcohol were actually my priority. They were more important than my kids, for example. They were more important than going to work. They were more important than staying in touch with friends. They were more important than staying in touch with my family. And really, my friends weren't really friends. They were more like acquaintances, you know. You were my really good friend if you had a load more money than me and more drugs and more alcohol than me. So you were my greatest friend, of course. And that's the way I used to live my life. And what I also did as well was I'd disappear for days on end. I got married when I was still out there. We had three sons together. And what was happening was I was just going out and not coming back and just leaving him with the kids. And then I wondered why he was getting angry. You know, I mean, my behaviour wasn't particularly pleasant. And I'd come up with all sorts of excuses and reasons for either not coming home or coming back late. I mean, the lies that I used to tell were just unbelievable. And I'd really start to begin my own lies. And then when that effectively, I suppose, helped to break up my first marriage. And then what I did was I had 2 years on my own before I came to the fellowship. And when my marriage broke up, I just thought, yes, great, I can go do what I want when I want to do it. Get nobody to answer to, fantastic. I've got nobody on my back moaning at me. And that's what I thought was the great thing. And I suppose that's quite sad, really. I don't have any regrets about it. I don't feel shame about it. It's just the way it was. It's just what I was at the time. And I was doing the best I could at the time. And the only way I knew how to deal with life was to use. That was it. I didn't know how to do it any other way because feelings were just too painful. I was really good at sorting everybody else's problems out, but when it came to my own, no, couldn't do it. And at various times, as I say, I tried different things to try and stop me using, and of course it didn't last. I'd always said to myself, oh, I'll never drink and use when I'm pregnant. Never. And I did. Didn't do it the first time, but I did the second and the third time. Because it just progressively got worse. You know, so what I had was like rules for myself or little rules I'd say to myself, right, I'm never going to do that. And as sure as fate, I did end up doing it. You know, I always pushed the barriers. I always ended up doing it. And so I came to the fellowship and I had the worst thing in my drinking and using hadn't happened. It was just one Monday morning. I'd woken up, I'd had a huge bender that weekend, and I don't know what happened. Something was different that day, and I just woke up and I thought, I'd had enough. I have had enough. Something needs to change, and I didn't know what it was, but something needed to change. Now, I didn't ever pray, you know, as far as God was concerned, it didn't exist, because if you had my life, there wouldn't be a God, you know, because I was really full of self-pity as well. And I also used to think, you know, if you had my life, you would drink and use as well. Of course you would. But for some reason, and this is only for me, and I'm not sitting here like some religious person, I don't go to church or anything like that, and I don't believe in anything religious, but it was one of those moments where you got on your knees and go, please God, help me, you know, because I used to do that from time to time. I'd go, please, I promise, I won't do that again if you give me whatever it is. You know, I used to try and make deals with whatever it was that I thought I was praying to. And I did get on my knees that morning, and that's the truth. And I did ask for help. And by the Wednesday, I'd picked up the phone to the fellowship and asked for help. And I didn't ring them up saying that I was an addict. I didn't ring them up saying I was an alcoholic. I just rang them up and said, I think I've got a problem. And that's what happened. And I remember I spoke to this guy called Tom, and all he said to me was, if it's costing you more than money, then you've probably got a problem. And that's exactly what I needed to hear, you know. And I came to my first meeting. And of course, I was full of ego, and I was living in Battersea at the time. But there's no way I was going to go to meetings in South London. I said to him, no, give me a meeting in Chelsea. Seriously. I think I've changed about somewhat since then. But I was just, you know, I was a bit of a mess. I was a mess. And I had stopped washing, I'd stopped eating, I'd stopped looking after myself, and you know, and I was offered a 12-step call. I was offered somebody to come out and see me. And you know why I said no? It's because my house was a mess. My house was a disgusting mess. It was just appalling. I was really ashamed of it. So I went to my meeting, and I still know the person that did the chair at my very first meeting. And in fact, his wife became my sponsor. And I just started hearing about what other people had experienced and heard about how other people felt. And for the first time ever, I started to hear how I felt. And that's what helped me keep coming back. There was various things at different times helped me keep coming back. You know, sometimes it was meeting my mates at the meeting helped me come back. Sometimes it was, there's loads of good looking guys at that meeting. You know what I mean? That helped me come back. But you know what? It didn't matter. The main thing was, is I kept coming to meetings. And my sponsor said to me, you know, if you put your recovery first before everything else, you'll be all right. And I was like, yeah, I know that. But I've got kids, you know, because I was racked with shame and guilt and remorse when I got clean and sober because of the things that I'd done. And she said to me, no, she said, you still need to put it first. And I was thinking to myself, get lost. You know, you have no idea. You don't understand what I'm talking about, you know, because you're not a mother. How would you know? She said, Liz, I'm telling you, you put it first. And she was right. And I've continued to do that. I've tried to do that just a day at a time. Tried to put my recovery first before anything else. And there has never been a day since I started going through the steps that in one form or another, I pray. I mean, I do pray every day. It's not to any religious God, it's to a power greater than me, because something helped me stay clean and sober. And the God I'm on understanding for a while was meetings, you know, and the people in the meetings. And for me, that's probably not really changed that much, because for me, I think the God of my understanding, the God I choose to understand, actually works through other people. So I can pick up the phone to somebody in a fellowship and talk to them. And do you know what? Invariably I'll get to hear what I need to hear. Because sure as fate, that person will suggest to me something that I need to do that will help me to feel better. And it never, ever fails. It's only my head that will get in the way of my recovery. The fellowship doesn't fail me. The people in the fellowship don't let me down. It's actually my own disease. If I start listening to my own head, then really I've got a problem then. You know, so if I start listening to my own head, it tells me lies. It tells me, nah, you don't need to go to a meeting, it's all right. Don't worry about it. Nah, don't bother ringing anybody, it'll be okay. You know, oh, no, you can handle that situation, you'll be all right. Or just, you know, just ignore it. And all of that sort of stuff. Because even although I've been clean and sober for over 9 years, you know, my disease is still progressing. For me, it is. You know, it's still as strong as it was when I stopped. In fact, and it continues to grow the more I carry on in my recovery. And so I have to remain vigilant. And for me, continuing to be vigilant is continuing to work the programme and to work the steps. You know, because when I looked at the steps, I looked at step one, the first half of step one, and I thought, yeah, I'm powerless. I didn't for 1 minute think my life was unmanageable, even though it was. I had debts all over the place as well. But what I then looked at was step nine. So I decided then to go out and start making amends to people. And of course, the very first person I ever tried to make amends to has still not spoken to me since, because I needed to go through the steps in the order that they're in before I was really ready, number one, to understand what I was making amends for and to really appreciate what it must have been like for that person to have been in the other end of my vile temper or whatever. And the reasons I was doing step nine in the beginning was for the wrong reasons. You know, it was because I wanted you to still be my friend. And that's not how I understand making amends to anybody today. It's really, it's about me cleaning up my side of the street so that I can walk out and I don't feel shame and I don't feel guilt about what I've done in the past. That I have made amends for what I've done. And amends for me is an ongoing thing, so I need to continue to try and not make those same mistakes. And I've not always done that. Of course I've not, because I'm not perfect. And I realised after a while coming to the fellowship that I'll never be perfect. I thought I would be, you know, and I have spent a long time giving myself a hard time for not being perfect, you know, not doing everything that I thought I could do, you know, because I thought I could be superwoman or supermother or, you know, whatever it is. And do you know what? I'm not. I'm human and I make mistakes. The difference for me today in my recovery, maybe because I've been practicing it for so long, is that I really don't give myself anywhere near as much of a hard time if I fuck up. You know, I really don't. I've learned to just go with the flow and just accept when things are going wrong a lot more than I ever used to. You know, and even in the last year, you know, I've had to address two different ones. It's got nothing to do with alcohol or drugs. And again, I've continued to change. I'm not the same person I was a year ago. I really am not. I'm not the same person I was a couple of years ago. And that's good. As long as I'm still going in the right direction, it's all right. And at first, when I discovered that I was using more than alcohol and drugs, you know, the shame that I felt around that, I thought I'd been, I was a failure. you know, I must be a failure, and I'm not. In fact, I'm really courageous because I was willing to look at it and change it. And I can sit up here and really know that I am and not flinch or be embarrassed about actually giving myself some praise because I deserve it. But I've not done it on my own. Do you know what I mean? I'm not sitting here saying, oh, I've done this myself. I couldn't have done it without coming here. I couldn't have done it without having a God of my own understanding. I couldn't have done it without sponsor. I couldn't have done it without all the sponsees that I've got and have had in my journey. You know, and I still sponsor today because for me it's really important to give away what's been freely given to me. And it's true, you know, and I can, and I know that there's a group of women, in fact, two of them are in here in this room tonight. There is a group of women who I know I can ring at any time. Even if I haven't seen them for a while or I haven't spoken to them for a while, I know that I can ring them because I trust them and I will tell them absolutely, completely what's going on. and I have no problem with that. And as I said, I don't always ring them, you know, every day or anything like that, but it's really good to have a really group, you know, a strong group of, for me, women, you know, because that I can talk to. And I'm almost running out of things to say, which is good. What's recovery given me? Recovery's given me freedom, I think, in essence, just freedom. Freedom from the obsession to use, the obsession to drink. That's what it's given me. It's not given me all the material things I thought it would give me when I was in my early days. And it's not about that today, because what it is about is freedom also in my own mind to be at peace, you know, to just go about my business and be all right with what I'm doing and know that I'm doing the right thing, know that I'm doing the best that I can. As I said, I do make mistakes. You know, I've done things that I can, even in recent years, that I can look back and think, I must have been unwell then, I suppose, for want of a better description. I've got, my three sons have not escaped, I suppose, the consequences of my using. But I can also look at them and know that it's not entirely my fault that they are the way they are today. It's not. You know, my youngest son seems to have sort of come off the best, really, I suppose, because he was really young when I got clean and sober. And I think because he was so young as well, and part of my guilt and my shame around the fact that I hadn't spent as much time with my other two sons meant that all that I did with him was talk to him a lot. And to this day, he doesn't shut up. He's like constant talking, and he's very funny. My middle son, he does things that I used to do. I'm not saying he's an addict, but the fact that he, you know, one can of Red Bull is not enough, and the fact that he's smoking, and you know, he's into sort of stuff, and I just think, okay, that's where he's at. But you know, the great thing is we talk. And that's one thing I was never able to do when I was growing up. And I'm not blaming my parents for that. It was just one of those things. I just was not able to talk about how I felt. And the one thing I know that I've got with all three of my sons is that we talk. You know, and even if they're calling me a fucking bitch or something like that, because, you know, they're teenagers. So they're well dodgy characters at the minute. Do you know what? Somebody said to me, isn't that great that they feel comfortable enough to tell you that you're an effing bitch? And I was like, okay, I can live with that. But it's all right. It is absolutely all right because I don't use and I work the program and I pray and I do the best that I can. Sometimes I wish I wasn't a mum and I spent a long time in my early recovery so resenting the fact that I was a mum because I was absolutely petrified because I woke up and I got clean and sober and I thought, where the fuck did these guys come from? And that's the truth. And I'll never forget it. And I remember exactly where I was. I was about 7 months sober. And I was like, what happened here? You know, I'd never planned that. And in my first year in recovery, you know, I got divorced. I had to move house and I had a custody case for my three kids. And, you know, and they tell you don't do too much in your first year. So I did all of those things. And a lot of it, again, was consequences of my using and drinking. And I got custody because by the time I'd got to court, I was clean and sober. And I would not have my kids if I had still continued to use. I have no doubt that I'd probably be dead. And I don't say that lightly or out of shock, I would be. Because the way my drinking and using was carrying on, I shouldn't be here. And today I've, you know, I work in a really strange environment, I suppose, for want of a better description. And I love it. It's fantastic. It's very challenging. And I'm doing work that I really love. And as I say, I'm studying as well. And I never, ever, ever used to finish anything I started. And my God, I'm actually in my second year. I'm coming up to the end of my second year. I'm doing a master's degree, and I'm even planning to do my third year, which is just absolutely, truly miraculous. You know, the fellowship hasn't given me material things, but what it's given me is choices. You know, I can choose to do that today, and I'm capable of it. And you know what? I'm not the top of the class, and that's all right, you know, which is another major step for me. That's major progress, you know, because I am a serious perfectionist. You know, everything I do has got to be absolutely perfect. And I've just sort of really, you know, over the years just started to sort of relax, but it takes time. And that for me is taking a long time. And my oldest son, finally, he lived with his dad for 4 years. And I always thought that if any of them ever moved to live with their dad, you know, I'd definitely pick up. And I didn't. I know people in this fellowship that have even lost children and stuff, and I've seen them stay clean and sober. You know, and they're a great example to me. You know, people that have gone through really serious, seriously rough things, and they haven't picked up. You know, so if they don't need to pick up, I don't need to pick up. You know, and the reality is that's not going to cure anything. It's not going to fix it. It'll be a short-term fix, you know, might get out of it for a short while, but I'm just going to feel as bad, if not worse, when I come to, and nothing is worth picking up for. It really isn't. You know, I've hit low points in my recovery as well that I never thought I would ever survive either, and it's been all right. And I even managed to get married for a second time and separate, and it was all right. Maybe. But that's okay, you know. And again, I don't have any regrets, because what's the point in regretting? Absolutely everything I've had to do in my recovery has meant that I'm here right now at this moment, sitting and talking in front of you, and I am truly, truly grateful for my recovery, and I have got another chance at life, and I am living it, you know. So I'm really grateful that Sam asked me to come and do the chair. So thanks very much. I should shut up now. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.